Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Volume I and I Do by Alexis de Tocqueville is a foundational study of democratic society, written after the author traveled to the United States in the early 19th century. More than a travel account, it is a wide-ranging analysis of how political institutions, social customs, religion, economics, and everyday habits interact to shape a democratic culture. Tocqueville examines the promises of equality and popular sovereignty, while warning about dangers that can quietly grow inside democratic life, including conformism, short-term thinking, and soft forms of despotism. Across both volumes, he compares American conditions with European history to explain why democracy took a distinct path in the United States and what lessons that path holds for other nations. The work remains influential because it treats democracy not only as a system of government, but as a social condition that changes how people think, organize, and relate to one another. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, equality as a social condition and its political consequences. A central theme is that democracy is driven not only by laws, but by an ongoing movement toward equality of conditions. Tocqueville treats equality as a powerful social fact that reshapes expectations about status, opportunity, and authority. In the American context, he observes, the decline of inherited ranks encourages citizens to see themselves as comparable, capable, and entitled to participate. That sense of similarity supports broad political inclusion, but it also changes how people judge excellence and leadership. When citizens value equality intensely, they may distrust elites and prefer accessible, familiar representatives. Tocqueville connects this to democratic instability and opinion, where majorities can swing quickly and public life can become sensitive to popular moods. He also explores how equality alters personal ambition, family relations, and work, pushing individuals to pursue material improvement and practical goals. At the same time, equality can generate isolation if people withdraw into private life, believing they need no one beyond their immediate circle. Tocqueville presents equality as double-edged. It can energize civic participation and widen rights, yet it can also create new vulnerabilities, including impatience with constraints and reduced tolerance for difference. Secondly, institutions, local self-government, and the craft of citizenship. Tocqueville emphasizes that American democracy is sustained by institutions that teach citizens how to govern. He pays particular attention to local self-government, where town and county practices give people repeated experience with public responsibilities. By handling practical matters close to home, citizens learn cooperation, compromise, and administrative habits that are hard to acquire in purely centralized systems. He links these arrangements to the rule of law, and to the stability created by predictable procedures. Another major focus is the judiciary and constitutional design, including the role of courts in mediating conflicts and limiting abuses. Tocqueville is interested in how legal culture influences political culture, shaping respect for rights and processes. He also discusses the press, parties, and political associations as channels through which opinions form and circulate. Rather than presenting democracy as spontaneous popular energy, he depicts it as a learned practice supported by routines and structures. The lesson is that freedom depends on skills and habits, not only on ideals. When democratic citizens have venues to deliberate and act locally, they become less dependent on distant authority and more capable of resisting overreach. Strong institutions, therefore, function as civic training grounds that translate democratic principles into durable behavior. Thirdly, civil associations and the balance between individualism and community. A striking part of Tocqueville's analysis is his attention to voluntary associations. He observes that Americans often form groups to solve problems, promote causes, and build shared projects. These associations are not limited to politics, they include religious, educational, charitable, and commercial initiatives. Tocqueville treats this as a practical solution to a democratic risk he calls individualism, the tendency for citizens in equal societies to focus on private life and detach from public concerns. Associations create intermediate spaces between the isolated individual and the state. They help people develop trust, leadership, and mutual responsibility, while also preventing government from becoming the only organizer of collective action. Tocqueville ties association life to freedom of speech and a pluralistic public sphere, where many groups can advocate and compete without violence. He also notes that associations can channel self-interest into public benefit, since people often join for personal reasons yet end up contributing to common goods. The broader point is that democracy requires social infrastructure networks and norms that make cooperation possible. Without these mediating bodies, citizens may seek solutions through centralized power, trading liberty for administrative convenience. Tocqueville's account remains relevant for understanding civic decline, polarization, and the role of community organizations in sustaining democratic resilience. Fourthly, religion, morality, and the cultural supports of freedom. Tocqueville argues that democratic institutions function best when supported by strong moral and cultural habits. He views religion in the United States as influential not primarily through direct political control, but through its role in shaping behavior, responsibility, and restraint. In his account, religious belief and practice can provide shared moral language that encourages honesty, family stability, and concern for others, which in turn lowers the social costs of freedom. Tocqueville is attentive to the way religious communities can coexist with political liberty when they avoid becoming an arm of the state. He also explores how democratic societies can drift toward materialism and immediate comfort, which may weaken civic virtue and long-term commitment. Against this drift, moral norms and community expectations can remind citizens that liberty requires discipline. Tocqueville does not treat culture as decorative, he treats it as structural. Customs, education, and public opinion can either reinforce self-government or make people passive. He highlights the subtle power of social norms in democracies, where coercion may be less visible but pressure to conform can be strong. By examining religion and morality as democratic supports, Tocqueville broadens political analysis beyond constitutions to include the values and practices that make rights usable in everyday life. Lastly, the tyranny of the majority and the threat of soft despotism. One of Tocqueville's most lasting contributions is his warning that democracies can oppress without obvious tyrants. He describes the tyranny of the majority as a condition where majority opinion dominates institutions, culture, and speech, discouraging dissent and narrowing acceptable thought. Unlike older forms of repression, this pressure can operate through social exclusion, reputational harm, and the fear of standing alone. Tocqueville connects this to the media environment of his time and to the broader dynamics of public opinion in equal societies. He also outlines a deeper risk, sometimes described as soft despotism, a paternal, administrative power that manages life in detail while citizens retreat into private comfort. In this scenario, people may keep formal rights yet lose the habit of using them, gradually accepting dependency and central oversight. Tocqueville's analysis highlights how democratic fragility often comes from gradual changes in behavior rather than sudden coups. He points to potential safeguards, including local institutions, independent courts, free associations, and a culture that respects minority viewpoints. The topic remains timely because it frames threats to democracy as psychological and social, as well as legal. Tocqueville invites readers to ask not only whether elections exist, but whether citizens remain capable of independent judgment and collective self-rule. In conclusion, this book is best suited for readers who want to understand democracy as a living system, rather than a set of election procedures. Students of political theory, history, law, and sociology will find an unusually rich framework for connecting institutions to culture, and engaged citizens will recognize many of the tensions Tocqueville describes in modern debates about polarization, civic trust, and government power. The benefit is practical, as well as intellectual. The book helps readers notice the social habits that sustain freedom, such as participation in local life, tolerance for disagreement, and commitment to shared norms. It also sharpens awareness of quiet dangers, including conformism, passivity, and the temptation to outsource responsibility to centralized administration. Compared with many contemporary books that focus narrowly on policy, partisan strategy, or headline events, Tocqueville offers a deeper diagnostic tool. He explains why certain democratic patterns recur across time, and he provides categories that help readers think clearly about majority power, individualism, and civic association. That breadth makes the book worth buying even alongside newer titles because it supplies durable concepts and a long view that contemporary commentary often lacks. Readers who invest the time gain a classic reference point for evaluating democratic health and personal civic responsibility. If you would like to support Alexis de Tocqueville, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.